Hey, quick review. We were studying, and again, this is going back weeks ago, but we were studying Gideon specifically. A little fearful judge, one of my favorites because I can relate to him. But here is a judge who, as you study his life, he did everything God commanded him to do. He was very obedient. He was extremely timid. He was the type of guy that's saying, yeah, but God, you know, don't you realize? And he would just pull himself together and obey God. And I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of in that. What is courage? To me, that's the theme in Gideon's life. It's courage. Courage is not, contrary to popular opinion, courage is not the absence of fear. That's not even reality. Those little high school kids that drive around in their vehicles with their no fear sticker on the back of the bumper. Isn't that a joke? Don't you want to call them on it? Don't you want to open up the door and say, are you scared of me? Are you really not scared of anything? I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I remember living that way, thinking I was indestructible, but it was a lie. It's like, you know, a rooster puffing out his chest and making himself look bigger than he is. No fear. Guys, courage is not the lack of fear. We all have fear. We all do. The toughest guy in the room, Randall, he's got fear. He's scared. He is. He's scared every day because he knows, you know, life is dangerous. But courage, biblical courage, is not the absence of fear. Courage is ignoring your fear. It's not allowing your fear to dictate your decisions. It's saying, oh, yeah, I'm scared. I'm doing it anyway. That's courage. That's Gideon. Sitting there shaking, clammy. I don't see him as this fierce warrior. I see him as a guy going, are you sure, God? Throwing out wool, make it wet, make it dry. I have to do something. I need to be sure. That's Gideon. And we hear about all these exploits of Gideon. Man, victory after victory. But, and this is one of the things I love about the Bible, doesn't airbrush anybody's life, doesn't hide all the scabs. It says, this is the truth. Here's the historical account of Gideon. And here it is, guys. Let me remind you of this verse. He does so well and rejects the plea from the people, come on, be our king. No, I'm not going to be your king. God's your ruler. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to steal credit from God. And he caves and asks for gold and makes this priestly garment, which ends up being a stumbling block to Israel. That's a focal point of idolatry for them. And then this statement is made. Let's skip down to verse 29. And Jerubbaal, that's his nickname if you remember the story, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house in Gideon, same guy, his real name, had 70 sons of his body begotten. 70 sons. Can you imagine? 70 sons, and then this lovely statement, for he had many wives. And all of us that are rooting for Gideon, all of us are like, man, I love this guy. We all go, no, Gideon, come on, man, what are you thinking? This multiple wives issue. Now, does God's word address that? Oh, you better believe it does. Deuteronomy chapter 17, specifically. Polygamy was huge in this culture, in this day. It's huge in many pockets of the world still today. But it's not godly, and God specifically speaks against it. Deuteronomy 17 says, do not multiply unto yourselves horses. And you're thinking, what is that all about? Wives and wealth, riches. And he specifically is talking about the rulers when he talks about that. Horses. What's that? Don't multiply on yourselves horses. That is, I realize we can't relate to that. Some of you are thinking, I like horses. It's putting your trust in the military is really what it is. You know, it's good to have a strong military, and God wasn't opposed to that. But to multiply to yourselves horses was really man putting trust in his military rather than his God. You know, we have the most powerful military in the world. But you know what? We are like a little baby in the midst of a pack of wolves if this country abandons God, and largely we have. Our military is nothing, guys. If God isn't behind us, you know, it's amazing the arrogance of our fellow citizens. You know, you talk about the potential of, you know, being, you know, attacked. Oh, no, nonsense, man. You know, the American military has these satellites. We can see missiles from miles away. We missed a 747. hitting a tower. Do you know what I mean? We're vulnerable if the blessing of God is not upon our nation. So that's what God is addressing. Do not multiply on yourselves. Horses, don't put your trust in the military and forget about me. Then the second one is, don't multiply unto yourselves. Wives, don't live like the pagan. Don't give yourself to multiple women. Well, there are men in the Bible that do just that. And that is one of those areas in the Old Testament where people go, what's the deal? How come God is silent in his condemnation? Number one, he wasn't silent. He made very clear his will before they ever did it. Do not do this. And this is what we need to know, guys. There's two ways, biblically speaking, there's two ways that God deals with disobedience. I suppose you could word it this way. There's two ways that God judges. He either judges directly and instantly, or he allows our own choices and the consequences of our choices to be our very judgment. It's not necessarily that God strikes with lightning as much as it is he says, okay, you have it your way. And he takes his hands of blessing off a people, off a nation, off an individual. That's what you see here. You see Gideon disregarding God in this particular area that God was clear about. Are there horrible consequences to this multiple wife arrangement of Gideon and these 70 sons? You better believe it. Civil war is the result of it. A massacre is the result of this. Can we trust God's word, guys? Even the thou shalt nots that we don't like, you can always trust God's word because he has foresight. We don't. We can't see past our nose most of the time, right? So let's read chapter 9. In light of that little bit of background, let's see how this whole thing plays out. Verse 1. And Abimelech, the son of Gideon, it's his nickname, went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether is better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's brethren spake of him in the ears of all the men of Shechem all these words. And their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he's our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-Berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons, which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone, notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Milo, and went and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. Let's pause there. First of all, you may or may not remember this one son of Gideon, Abimelech. He was the product of a mistress, not even the wives of Gideon, but he had a concubine. That's a lady with physical benefits only. He used this girl. He wasn't legally married to her. He just used this woman. And she lived in a neighboring village in Shechem. Well, Abimelech grows up in a house of 70 brothers. And one of the things that irritates, no doubt, Abimelech is the fact that his daddy will not assume the throne that his nation wanted him to. He denied that. No, God is our king. God is our ruler. I won't do it. And that was exactly God's will at that time in Israel. So he denied it. And he also said, and none of my sons will be kings in this nation. Well, the story goes on. Gideon dies, and Abimelech has a lust for power. You've got to watch those people. And you also got to be honest that same potential is in our heart, guys. The lust for power, the lust for authority or position among men. That is one of the three drives that makes this world go around. Hey, let's take a quick little detour to 1 John. Would you turn there with me? 1 John chapter 2. Got to see this at least, and we'll move on. This world system, the current system that we find ourselves in, it's summarized by God's word in just one verse. Let's read about it. 1 John chapter 2, let's start in verse 15. says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, three things, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Guys, do you hear that? There's a current that we ought to be made aware of. A current, and most of us, if not all of us, have been swept away by that current for whole years and seasons of our life, and maybe for some of us, we just got sucked in around the bend and got rescued. It was a short little visit. But there is a current, and it is a strong current, and believe me, and some of you don't need me to convince you, it's stronger than you and it's stronger than me. We cannot resist it by ourselves. And then the current that I'm talking about is what makes this world tick. This world system, for some reason, we think, I'm just going to tip my toe in there and just test the water, and we'll rip downstream. That's the way sin works, guys. It is a violent force. And it can be described in three ways: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's it. That is the world in a nutshell. The lust of the flesh, passion. It can also be described with the three P's, and I got that drilled in my head from a kid. Passion, possessions, and power. That's what this world is all about. The lust of the flesh, passion. And I'm talking about specifically sinful passions. We use a term, you guys that are in law enforcement, you hear this a lot. And those of us that work in social services, we hear this word a lot. Willpower. Isn't that an absolute joke? You hear that a lot. I mean, what you need is willpower, man. Just say no. Remember the campaign in the early 90s? The war on drugs, just say no? What a failure. Just say no. Yeah, that's it. No, just say yes to Jesus is really your only out. It's your only way of deliverance. I couldn't say no. And listen, I remember times in my life when I wanted to say no with all of my heart, with every bone in my body. I could see the consequences to sin, and I made a determination by myself, never again will I do this or that. And it was by the end of the day, I'm with my buddies, and I'd, come on, you've been there. And I'd cave every time. Willpower is a joke. If you've been successful to say no to sin, it's only because you replaced it with another one, apart from Jesus. I have seen that. I've seen men give up vices for a pretty face. But what did they do? They just swapped sins. They didn't overcome anything. They're just taking another path to hell, ultimately. That's not willpower. That's just an indication of how weak we are. And I'm including myself in this, guys. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Think about this. The lust of the eyes. Think about how much of our world is based on what we see. How much marketing, for example, just the marketing industry alone is dependent on the fact that we humans are deceived by what we see. Isn't it crazy? It's a genius world that we live in. And there is a master behind the scenes that knows how to tempt us, knows how to draw us away. One of the things I hate about the city, and I don't hate everything about the city, but I specifically hate billboards. And especially if you're not used to them. Do you know what I mean? When you're going down the highway and you live there, I suppose there becomes a desensitization to it. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing either. But I know when a little country boy is going across the Walt Whitman Bridge and there are these, 40-foot walls of barely dressed women, it's like visual sabotage or whatever the case. Visual traps are everywhere, guys. Everywhere. The lust of the eyes, possessions. What is the sin, ultimately, that's on the other side of that illusion? It's covetousness, right? I see it, I like it, I gotta have it. Man, we've gotten crafty with our means of manipulating through visual stimulation. We as a culture. And then the pride of life, or the lust for power. Now, the reason why I bring this up tonight, you can go ahead and flip back to Judges chapter 9. Out of those three, passion, possessions, and power. Out of those three, the one that stands alone in that The men that fall prey to this particular sin, and that is the lust for power, that particular sin stands alone in ending in violent death. You think about it. Now listen, pursuing your flesh, your passions. Many people have died in that pursuit. In fact, the end of all sin is death, right? But, you know, a sex drive. How many sexually transmitted diseases are in this world of ours? The list is growing. It's a scary thing. It claims the lives of millions every year. And unborn babies because of the sex god that so many serve. There's death with that, absolutely. But violent death. Death that results in millions dying under the rule of one individual. These tyrants that lust for power. There is nothing potentially more dangerous than that lust for power. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we got to be on our guard against this, guys. Abimelech was a power-drunk individual, wasn't he? He wanted to rule, guys. He wanted the whole nation to call him king. And God was not into it at all. He was a self-exalted king. Let's look closer to this. Let's look to see how this man pulls it off. First of all, he goes to his uncles. He goes to this hometown that he was born in, right? His mom was a Shechem gal. And he goes to his uncle specifically, and he starts to talk about Zerubbabel. He starts to talk about him in a negative light. You got to watch out for those people. Those individuals who talk down on the guy who's not there. Watch out for that guy at work. You know who I'm talking about. You're in the break room, you're drinking coffee, or if you don't have a break room, you work outside, you're in the sitting on a tailgate, whatever. And there are those people, man, on the job site that they love to slander and destroy the reputation of everybody, truthfully, who doesn't happen to be present. You know those people? Take this to the bank, guys. That's you when you're not there. If you see that in an individual, don't chime in. Don't give heed to that. Realize when you're not there, he's talking about you or she's talking about you. It's a power drive. Ultimately, there's something about wanting to exalt ourselves. And how do we do that? We talk down to everybody and it makes ourselves feel better for some reason. It really just shows how depraved we are. Well, consider that. Here, Zerubbabel shows up and he starts to convince this people, listen, you don't want my brothers leading you, right? You don't want 70 people. Who are you going to call boss? We need leadership. That's what we need in this country. We need good leadership. Vote in November, right? That's Zerubbabel's. Abimelech. He's a politician. And he says to them, listen, I'm your flesh. Vote for me. Vote for Abimelech. Well, he persuades them, and these people go out and they convince their whole town, we want the hometown boy to be the king. Right, guys? Oh. And so they finance this little campaign. They give this guy 70 pieces of silver. And what does he do? It says he hires, I love this wording, Old English, he hired vain and light persons. You know what that means? Worthless and reckless. Scum buckets. Is that okay to use on Sunday? I hope so. He went out and rented a firing squad, a posse. A bunch of guys that were vain fellows, empty. Probably weren't known for their IQs, but they were known for their knuckles. And they were known for their grin. Right? And that's this group of guys. And he shows up to Ophrah, his hometown, his father's hometown, and he kills all his brothers. You see what the lust for power does, guys? It ends up causing you to turn on your own. He was so paranoid and so wanted to ensure that he's the boss, he kills all of his brothers. There's no end to the heart of man when it's not restrained. Kills them all, except... And kills them all at this one spot. It's almost ritualistic how he pulls this off. It's pretty twisted, pretty dark. Well, this one son of Gideon, Jotham, the youngest one apparently, ends up hiding. And you can kind of understand. If there was three brothers, it'd be difficult to hide. Where's that third one? But when there's 70, how many have we killed? 67, 68, I can't remember. So he successfully hides, gets away, Jotham is going to prove to be a little prophet here. So let's press on. Let's see how this whole thing plays out. Abimelech is crowned king, self-exalted king. And now let's move on. In verse 7, and when they told it Jotham, that is your older brother Abimelech is now king, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim and lifted up his voice and cried and said unto them, hearken unto me, you men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. Now, if you're not familiar with the Bible, or maybe you just haven't read the Old Testament for a while, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim are very significant mountains, because those are the mountains specifically that the Jews, when they first came into the Promised Land, what did they do there, guys? Anybody remember? What did Joshua proclaim ultimately, and Moses originally? Do you guys remember? The blessings and the cursings. That's what Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim stood as, a constant memorial to: you obey God, he will bless us. You disobey, he will withdraw his hand of blessing, and the curse of this world will be upon us. Well, he chooses, be cool, stay in school. He chooses, that is, at least I knew the difference, right? Anyway, sorry, Mom. Abimelech chooses Mount Gerizim to stand and pronounce a curse for obvious reasons. That would echo in these Jewish men's mind. So he gets up there on Mount Gerizim and he lifts up his voice and says, give me your attention if you want God's attention. That's the first thing he says. Well, I'm sure. And by the way, they're all in the valley at this point. His voice is echoing between that little canyon. They hear this young man loud and clear. And then he gives a parable. He lays out a parable, one of the few Old Testament parables. Let's read it. He says, and this is a little awkward when you first read it. He says, the trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them. You've already lost me, Jotham. Trees can't do that. It's a parable. The trees went forth on a specific time to choose a king, someone to rule over them. And they said unto the olive tree, rain thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Huh? Now, there's a point to it. No, ultimately is what the olive tree said. And the tree said to the fig tree, come and thou reign over us. And the fig tree said unto them, should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said the trees unto the vine. Notice the digression, guys. Their standard is lowering. Come thou and reign over us. And the vine said unto them, should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? And then said all the trees unto the bramble. That's the brush, the thistles, the bushes. Come thou and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth you anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now what's the point of all this? Guys, remember this. Jotham's dad, Gideon, was asked by the nation to be king. The olive tree. The greatest one. And what did he say? He declined. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave what God has made me to be and dishonor God in that way. I've been planted where I am. God called me to be a warrior. God called me to be a judge. I'm not to be the king. God will rule over you. And then they look to the sons of Gideon, and they, like their dad, said, not us. We're following the footsteps of our dad. God will be king. God alone. But yet, and you get the implication, the nation is lowering their standard. And what is Jotham referring to his brother Abimelech? Just a bush. You have settled for a thistle. Part of the curse, by the way, when you understand the Old Testament, you have settled for a leader who is not even qualified to be a leader. And it's going to burn you in the end, is what he's saying. That's his prediction. That's his parable. This bramble bush has accepted the role and is coming to a league with you. You trust me, I'll take care of you. You don't, I'll burn you. So there's a tyrannical rule about this Abimelech. Verse 16, now therefore, here's the point. Now therefore, if you have done truly and sincerely in that you have made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal, or Gideon, and his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands. And then, by the way, he adds this little clause, for my father fought for you, and risked his life for you, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. Just want to throw that in there. But you have risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons, 70 persons, upon one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If you have dealt truly and sincerely with Gideon and with his house this day, then rejoice. What am I to say? Rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and the house of Milo. And let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Milo and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled, and he went to Beer. That is the place. It's always bad to go to Beer when you're depressed and scared. But anyway, he runs and resorts to this city called Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother. Guys, do you understand the prophecy? Do you understand the prediction? Little Jotham says, believe me, if God isn't in this, and you have done this thing unjustly, then there will be a horrible end to this. There will be civil war. This relationship that you have with this king, it will be your undoing. And you will turn on each other, and it will end in horrible disaster. Well, let's see if indeed that's the case. When Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel, just 3 years, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. They turned on their king. In other words, that the cruelty done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid upon Abimelech their brother, which slew them, and upon the men of Shechem, which aided him in the killing of his brethren. And the men of Shechem sent liers in wait for him in the top of the mountains, and they robbed all that came along the way by them, and it was told Abimelech. And here's this guy. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, came with his brethren. They went over to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. Okay, we want him to be our leader now. And he persuades these people to follow him instead of their current king. He's a divisive individual. Again, he has a lust for power. And it says, and they went out into the fields, and they gathered their vineyards, and trod the grapes, and made merry, and went into the house of their God, and did eat and drink, and cursed Abimelech. Guys, picture the scene. The harvest is in, these guys are all half in the bag, they're feasting, and they're just shooting off the lip at the leader. Can you believe this guy? And there's no trust, but what do you expect? Think about this. The relationship began on a real shaky foundation, right? Here's a guy who killed his own family to establish this throne. That's not a leader that you're going to trust long term. See, their relationship began on real uncertain territory. What do you expect, right? I've seen relationships start and end because they started in such a horrible way. Yeah, listen, the grace of God is always available. God has worked in my life. Let me just tell you this. I don't want to talk about me too much, but I am the one talking, I suppose. My marriage started on really shaky soil. In fact, I will say to you, my friends, tonight, I got married for all the wrong reasons, truthfully. I got married for all the wrong reasons. And I was not walking with the Lord when I committed and made vows to my wife. And everything was against us, truthfully. And there is no reason our marriage should have survived. And the first year of my marriage was the worst year of my life, truthfully. It was horrible. But God got involved. That's the amazing thing. And I would not encourage the route I took to anybody that I love. No, avoid that. It's horrible. But I can tell you that there are times, because of the grace of God, that He works with way less than ideal circumstances and produces something amazing out of it. Takes ashes and produces beauty. I've seen Him do it. But there is the typical end result of a relationship beginning on shaky soil, whether that's a political relationship or a marriage or a friendship, a business relationship, whatever the case may be. No wonder these people didn't have long-term trust for this guy, because they know what he's capable of. They know what he's willing to do to become king. You understand? And so, just 3 years, and they turn on this guy, and they're looking to new leadership. They're looking for another. Well, consider that. And these men begin to rally. And let's see how this goes. It says in verse 28, and Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? Who does this guy think he is? Who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is not he the son of Jerubbaal and Zebul, his officer?" That's the general currently. "Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. Why should we serve him?" So this guy is just going off, guys. Again, beware of those people that are just talking about everybody who's not there. Why should we serve this guy? Give me one good reason why we should serve this guy. He goes on to say, "And would to God this people were under my hand. If only I was the leader, I'd do it different. Then would I remove Abimelech." And he said to Abimelech, "Increase thine army and come out." He doesn't say it directly to him, but he's throwing out these threats. Bring it on. You know, he's sounding like a real strong leader, right? He's sounding like he has all the answers. I want to get behind this guy. He's not scared of anything. But guys, listen. It's usually the people that talk the loudest and boast the most. It is usually the case that there is nothing behind those flapping lips. Have you noticed that to be the case? The guys that talk the loudest, when it really comes down to it, "Oh, just kidding." Remember the high school scene? I know for some of us, we got to go back a little further. Remember the inflated chest thing that takes place? Remember that? Talking tough, "Throw the first punch, you throw the first punch, you throw the first punch." And for some reason, we always used to call it the invisible massive lat syndrome. You know what I mean? Where all of a sudden the arms come out like, "What is that? What are you doing?" You're not really that big. It's air. We all know that. But for some reason, you think you're huge all of a sudden. What is all that drama and that talk? It's just bluff, isn't it? Truthfully, there's nothing behind it. That's the world, guys. Let me just throw this in there. One of the things that bothers me the most about why people won't come to Christ and come to church is why? "I'm not going to church because the church is filled with hypocrites." See, we've all said it. That's why we all had it on the tip of our tongue. I know that one. I used it for years. Guys, if you don't like hypocrites, don't go to hell, because that's where they hang out. Don't avoid church. Avoid hypocrites altogether. The world is filled with hypocrites, right? I'm way more handsome than I really am. I'm saying, you know, the guy in the world. You know, looking. No, my point is, all right, the club scene. The club scene. That is the biggest group of hypocrites the world has ever seen. Everybody with just a few drinks is so cool. You know what's really fun? Go to a wedding reception where there is drinking and stay sober, obviously. But right, good advice, Pastor. But go to a wedding reception in sobriety and just observe. What an experiment, man. When you used to join them, you, like them, thought, "Man, we are so cool. Are we not cool? And tough, man, we are bad cats." Stay sober the whole time and just watch that scene, and you're going, "Oh my goodness. I mean, there's nothing cool about that scene. It's actually quite pathetic and sad." But that's hypocrisy, guys. That is unbelievable hypocrisy. Well, I see this guy, Gaal, just that. What a hypocrite. What a bragger. Well, let's put his money where his mouth is. He calls the king out. Well, it's going to be civil war. "When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled." But he doesn't show it. He starts doing this good cop, bad cop. He starts playing both sides. He's a smart guy, this general. He sends messengers to Abimelech, privately notice, saying, "Behold, you should know, king, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brethren be come to Shechem, and behold, they fortify the city against thee." Now therefore, up by night, thou and the people that is with thee, and lie in wait in the field. And it shall be that in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, thou shalt rise early and set upon the city, and behold, when he and the people that is with thee, or with him, come out against thee, then mayest thou do to them as thou shalt find occasion. Do what you see fit. So he tips the king. Abimelech takes advantage. He rose up, and all the people that were with him by night, and they laid wait against Shechem in four companies. And look at this. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entering of the gate of the city, and Abimelech rose up, and the people that were with him, from lying in wait. So picture this. The sun is just about to peak over the horizon. It's still dark. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, behold, there come people down from the top of the mountains. And Zebul said unto him, thou seest the shadow of the mountains as if they were men. Now you're seeing things, man. It's just shadows. Just relax. You're paranoid. Zebul, allowing the armies of the current king to advance, of course. It says that Gaal spake again and said, see, therefore, come people down by the middle of the land. No, I'm telling you, man, I'm seeing people. And then he says, and another company come along the plain of Maonim. So he's saying, there's people over there, there's people over there. I love this. I love this next statement. Then Zebul said unto him, where is now thy mouth? That is precious, isn't it? Where's your mouth now, buddy? The cat's out of the bag, right? And Zebul shows his true colors. Oh, by the way, that is an army. Where's your big talk now, tough guy? Why don't you go, he says. He says, all right, hold, where was I? Where's your mouth? Oh, yeah, 38. Wherewith thou settest? Who is Abimelech? He's reminding him. Remember you said, who's Abimelech that we should serve him? Is not this the people that thou hast despised? Go out, I pray thee, and fight with them. And Gaal went out before the man of Shechem. No doubt his pride forced him to. And fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many were overthrown and wounded, even unto the entering of the gate. And Abimelech dwelt at Harumah, and Zebul thrust out Gaal and his brethren that they should not dwell in Shechem. Guys, isn't this typical? The pride of man leads him to his own destruction. You know, it's very rare, after all the talk, when you call a guy's bluff, that he ever says, yeah, you're right, I'm really scared, I don't know what I was thinking. That is so rare, to actually humble yourself and say, I'm out, I was kidding, I'm really scared inside, I'm like a little kid. But pride will drive a man to destroy himself. That is a sad thing. Have you seen that? I have, I've lived it. But in this case, Gaal swallows hard and says, oh, I gotta do it. I've talked big. I got an army behind me. And not only does the pride of this man destroy him, but it destroys everybody that follows him. That's the sad thing. That's what we really got to be tuned into, is our pride has long-term consequences. Humility. We got to walk in it. Well, let's finish. And it came to pass on the morrow that the people went out into the field and they told Abimelech, and he took the people and divided them into three companies. And he laid wait in the field and looked, and behold, the people were come forth out of the city. And he rose up against them, and he smote them. And Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood in the entering of the gate of the city. And the two other companies ran upon all the people that were in the fields and slew them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. And he took the city and slew the people that was therein, and beat down the city, and sowed it with salt. It covered the whole thing with salt to produce any growth, any prosperity, even long term. When all the men of the tower of Shechem heard that, they entered into the hold of the house of the god Bear. So there's this hiding place, guys. Picture this. The city's been destroyed, it's been defeated, so the remaining inhabitants that are part of this rebellion, they run into this tower, and they're hiding there. About 1,000 of them. Well, again, somebody tips Abimelech. The rest of them are in that tower. That's not a good place to be. Especially in light of the fact that this tower was made of combustible material. Well, let's press on. It says, And it was told Abimelech, verse 47, that all the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech gat him up to the Mount Zalmon, which is just on the border of the city. He and all the people that were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bow from the trees and took it. And he laid it on his shoulder and said unto the people that were with him, "What you have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done." And all the people likewise cut down every man his bow, and followed Abimelech and put them to the hold and set the hold on fire upon them. So all the men of the tower of Shechem died also, about 1,000 men and women. Guys, just exactly like Jotham said, right? This is going to end bad. You will burn in the end. That's exactly what took place. He foresaw, if God's not behind this, this thing's going to end in civil war. He could see this. No doubt God gave him the wisdom to see this. Just a couple of more verses, because you got to see this, and we'll finish. Then Abimelech went to Thebes and encamped against Thebes and took it. Now, what does this have to do with the men of Shechem? What does this neighboring city have to do with this conflict? Well, nothing. Except that now Abimelech is operating under paranoia and fear to preserve his throne. If there's one rebellion that's broken out, then there might be more. And he just goes on a rampage. He is going to make it known, "I am ruler in this area." And see, what was the prophecy? Not only will Shechem die at the hand of Abimelech, but Abimelech will die in the process as well. They will both be destroyed. Well, he attacks Thebes, and it says in verse 51 that there was a strong tower within that city, and thither fled all the men and women, and all they of the city shut it to them and gat them up to the top of the tower. And Abimelech came unto the tower and fought against it and went hard unto the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman cast a piece of a millstone upon Abimelech's head, and all to break his skull. Oof, that's harsh. A piece of a millstone. Guys, you know a millstone is a big one that was used in on an industrial level to, you know, grind out grain for an entire culture or community. But there's also a mini one, you know, that was a house-held millstone. It was much smaller, and you would use it in the kitchen, kind of like a rolling pin, I suppose, in our culture. You know, the saying of the day was, interestingly enough, being chained to the millstone. You know, that's a reference to a man being tied to his wife. We have the ball and chain concept in our culture. That was a saying in that day. You know, Jesus used that saying. A man that would cause a little one to stumble, it would be better for that man to be cast into the depths of the sea with a millstone around his neck. Kind of interesting. But this woman takes just a piece of millstone and whoop, throws it. Gravity is a precious thing, you know, when it's used right. Just tosses it over the edge of that tower, and this king, oh, that's it, lights out. And he's laying there with a dent in his head. Totally ruined his whole day. Ruined his plans. He's in rough shape. And look what he says. It says, he called hastily unto the young man, his armor bearer, and said unto him, "Draw thy sword and slay me, because I don't want to get picked on by my buddies," right? "That the men say not of me, a woman slew him." And his young men thrust him through, and he died. Sad, guys. Tragic, really. The end result, a shameful thing. He's there with a mortal head wound and says, "Listen, please give me an honorable death. I can't die knowing my buddies are going to pick on me, saying, 'You got hit in the head with a rock. A lady took him down.' I can't die that way." Again, pride, right? Anyone can throw a rock. Lady, man, but pride. And so this young armor bearer finishes this guy off. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed every man unto his place. Everyone went home, game over. And God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father, and slaying his 70 brethren, and all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render upon their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Gideon, or Jerubbaal. Guys, in closing, what is this concept? And does it apply for us today? It does. The concept that we just read about, a classic example, is the principle of sowing and reaping. It's not karma. It only happens in this life. Karma. It's sowing and reaping. The Bible is very clear. What a man sows, that will he will also reap. What goes around comes around. It's the universe that God made. And you know what? It works both ways. It works in a negative sense. If you go out and burn people and steal people and kill people, it's coming around. Those who live by the sword, what? Die by the sword, right? That's the truth. But you know, sowing and reaping actually works to our benefit as well. Go around and bless people. Go around and give yourself in service to others, and it comes back at you. It's a cool thing. It's an absolutely cool thing. It is the principle, one of the principles of God's universe. That's why the golden rule is do unto others as you would have them to do unto you, because they're going to do it to you. That's the point. Oh, they're going to do it, good or bad. So that's something to keep in mind. Let's close in prayer. Father, thank you so much for time in your word. Thank you for the whole day, Lord. You've been faithful to speak, and you've been faithful to challenge us. I pray, Lord, that this feeble little Bible study that I just offered up, that, Lord, it would be fruitful, that we would consider these things, not just close our mind to them now as we leave, but continue to consider them, see how it might apply to us today. So trust your Spirit to do that work in us. Lord, thank you so much for everybody in the room. Lord, please bless our week. Give us success in everything that we put our hand to do. Help us to get our jobs done and be faithful with our responsibilities. And Lord, ultimately help us to do it in a way that glorifies you. We pray. In Jesus' name, amen.